The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Continue to get more updates and information on the Middle East this morning and the impacts that the situation may have across the globe. To discuss this, I'm joined firstly by Ziad Daoud, who is Chief Emerging Markets Economist with Bloomberg Economics. Ziad, thank you very much for being with us this morning and for joining us on this one. I suppose on a very local level, we're all wondering how this is going to impact us as it continues. Can you tell us what you expect to see to emerge when it comes to economic and financial impacts, starting perhaps with the price of oil?
Sure. So, what happened over the weekend and what's going on now in terms of the events in the Middle East are probably unprecedented. And if you have unprecedented events, they lead to some predictable outcomes, but also unintended consequences. The region is obviously very important. Energy producer, about one-third of global oil supplies comes from the region. The conflict has already affected almost 10 countries. But the impact on oil has not been, there's been no physical damage to oil yet. Oil prices did rise or have risen since the weekend at about $80 now, up from 72 on Friday. But that reflects basically phase of disruption rather than actual disruption.
Okay.
The key things here that would happen that could lead oil prices higher are either attacks on oil tankers in the Gulf, attacks on oil infrastructure in the region, or the closure of Strait of Hormuz, which is very important for global oil trade.
Okay, and that certainly has been something that people have been concerned about over the last number of days. You're in Dubai this morning, isn't that right?
Yeah, I live in Dubai. I've been in Dubai here for a while.
So tell us what it has been like there. We understand that life is carrying on as normal, but people are very shaken by what's been happening over the weekend.
Yeah, it's mostly normal. So it's quieter than usual. You're asked to work from home and stay mostly home when you can. There are some people on the street. It mostly feels normal. You do hear the odd loud bang here and there. Yeah, mostly fine. And given what I do, I've been busy, so it's hard to go out on the street anyway.
I'm sure. We're going to try and improve your line, Ziad, because it is a little muffled. In the meantime, I want to go to Professor Ray Murphy from the Irish Centre for Human Rights at the University of Galway. Ray, thank you for joining us this morning. I mean, your experience and interest in this runs very deep because you've previously been on peacekeeping work in the Middle East with the Defence Forces. But you say that what happened over the weekend is a violation of the UN Charter, that Israel and the United States had no right to do this without first seeking approval.
Yes, Claire, I think this is a clear violation of international law. There was no imminent threat to either Israel or the United States. In fact, they were in the middle of negotiations. And to justify this under the rules of self-defense, there would have had to exist an imminent threat that could be objectively ascertained. And it actually appears now that part of the reason, at least actually the primary reason why this particular attack was launched when it was, is that an opportunity arose to take out the whole Iranian leadership that were meeting in Tehran with the supreme leader, and that this is what prompted Israel and the United States to launch this attack. And that, if you recall, the Qatar intermediaries were suggesting that some progress, in fact some good progress, had been made up to Friday, and that the negotiations were at least advancing and progressing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they say that they're dismayed by the action taken over the weekend. But you know what's interesting when you see all of this play out and you see Qatar saying that they're dismayed and the UN saying that they're extremely concerned about what happens next? Nobody can do a damn thing about it, can they?
No, and unfortunately, we don't know where this is going to end. I mean, there's no military adage that your plan of battle only survives first contact with the enemy. And therefore, now there are a number of potential outcomes. And two of the things that aren't spoken about to the extent which surprised me, one is the nuclear facilities that the Iranians have, because if if the regime falls, and remember that that's not a likely scenario in many ways because there's a system in place. It didn't depend on one particular individual. And we've already seen that there's been, new leaders have been appointed. But Iran has significant uranium material for nuclear bombs and for civilian purposes. They're very close to being upgraded to nuclear weapon material. But more significantly, if the country implodes on itself and there isn't a unified succession in terms of leadership, and there's protests that may lead to some form of civil war and different factions fighting, we don't know who could get their hands on this nuclear material. And while it's quite complex to make a nuclear bomb, it's much, much less complex to make a dirty bomb using nuclear material. And if this, we already don't know what became of this material. And if it gets into the hands of the wrong people, it could pose a very significant threat to neighboring countries and to the world at large. Mm-hmm. And I'd also point out, although the Iranian leadership was taken out by this particular military action early on Saturday, they already had put in place dedicated command structures so that we've witnessed that the military response has been quite significant from the Iranians. Their central command, they're not relying on central command. They're relying on local commanders who have been given the authority to conduct the campaign as a consequence of what's happening.
So is your overall message, Ray, don't underestimate the capabilities of the Iranians to respond to this?
Exactly, yes. I mean, although I think it was incredibly foolish of the Iranian leadership to meet in the fashion that they did, they've had months to prepare for this scenario, which was a very real scenario and a real build-up, and they already have put in place command and control structures which will allow them to respond militarily for I don't know how long. But they have very we know about their missile capabilities, but they're one of the world's top producers of drones, and they're very effective drones, and they're much easier to produce, they're much easier to control, and they cause chaos, and we've already seen that.
All right, Ray, thank you very much for joining us. That's Professor Ray Murphy. And this is affecting all sorts of people, including Nicola Hanlon, who's an Irish woman stranded in Dubai this morning. Nicola, hello to you.
Good morning, Cara. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, we've been better. I suppose the situation is kind of intense. We're getting, we can see missiles been intercepted over our heads. We can hear loud noises. We can see smoke, in the distance. So I suppose when we have times of, quietness, you're kind of lulled into a false sense of security, and then it starts all over again,
So what are you doing in Dubai?
So we're here on a trip, myself and four of my best friends. We planned it last year, a 4-day trip, because we were all turning 40 on the 1 year. And I suppose at this time of the year, our babies were over the 1 year mark. So we said we'd all be, well able to leave them. And that's why we're here.
So you went out for 4 days. So when did you must have gone out sort of Thursday time, was it Wednesday or Thursday?
Thursday. We landed Thursday morning, and we were due to fly back today at 2:00.
Ah, so now you can't get out.
Yeah. No, now we can't get out.
Okay, because the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Helen McEntee, said there would be a limited number of commercial flights leaving from Abu Dhabi. Have you tried to access these flights that she's mentioning? Nicola's line has gone down. Let's go to Chris Reynolds, who's former head of the International Coast Guard and who's on the line. Hello to you, Chris.
Morning, Claire.
What do you make of what you've seen since this all started at the weekend, the Israeli-US attack on Iran and the response?
Well, from a shipping point of view, the biggest problem is that oil supplies from Kuwait, to a certain extent from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain and UAE are being disrupted. And that will push up cost of everything.
So from the basic goods that we use to what we expect to increase, gas, petrol and diesel, you're saying everything is going to increase in price?
Yes, because the cost of the oil will go up. Once the cost of the oil goes up, the cost of shipping goes up. And once you push your cost of shipping up, that passes on to the consumer.
Is that unavoidable at this stage as you look at this?
Well, they have to source their oil from somewhere else. This is the issue. In the short term, they'll have to look away from Bahrain and from the access to the Persian Gulf and look for oil in other places to get through. If the Iranians also attack the Suez Canal, which they could well do, to close that route off as well, that'll create even bigger problems.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at this situation, and we've been talking about the Iranian capacity here to return fire and to spread this right across the region, as we have seen over the last couple of days, do you expect these types of shutdowns to happen, the Strait of Hormuz, the Suez Canal?
The Strait of Hormuz is shut down. So ships are stuck either side of the Gulf. They're either stuck in the Persian Gulf or they're stuck in the Gulf of Oman. They can't move around the very tight bend at the north of the UAE. So that is the choke point that the Iranians can take you out. So they're stuck. So that has stopped already. I wouldn't be surprised to see Yemen taking Iran side and attacking shipping going up to Bab al-Mandeb and up into the Suez Canal, and that will be a big problem because then shipping will have to route around by South Africa, and that's going to add 2 weeks extra travel time onto your goods, and that's 2 weeks extra cost.
So do you expect then that the actions of France, Germany and Britain will be instructive or important here in terms of sorting out the logistical side of this, or are we in this intractable position that cannot be fixed in the short to medium term?
I think the latter is the truth. There's not much that the EU can do here, or European states can do here. We're very much at the, this has to be sorted out, I suppose, diplomatically in the long run. And until there's a new government in Iran, they've no one to talk to anyway.
Mm-hmm. Chris, we'll leave it there, but thank you for your expertise. Chris Reynolds there, former head of the International Coast Guard. Nicola is back with us, stuck in Dubai, hoping to fly out this afternoon. Nicola, I was just talking to you about whether you've been able to get any information on flights. I take it you won't be leaving today. Are you certain of that?
No. Yeah, we're certain of that. So we've been rebooked now twice to say when the Emirates open up their, you know, possibility, they'll open up the flight plan. So we have a travel agent who's actively seeking to get us on flights as soon as they become available. So as it stands at the minute, we've been cancelled on two flights. So we're on the 210 on Wednesday night. And that's obviously pending on the airspace opening.
So you are sheltering in place as you've been told to do. But what you really want to do is to be on a flight to get out of there.
Oh, Claire, like, we just want to get home to our families. Do you know, it's so upsetting. And I, like, for five women who are from Roscommon to see and witness what we're witnessing. And I know people are saying, you know, it's very calm. But when you've never been in this situation before and you have no date or time to get home or get out to your families, it's so concerning. You know, what we want really is we're watching the news and watching Sky News and we're trying to limit the amount of social media that we're looking at. And we can see that the UK have a plan in terms of their government to be escalating up to getting their people out. You know, and I'm not a politician, and respectfully, you know, it's not my area of expertise. But what we really would love to see is some sort of strategic plan from the government just to say if.
Well, that line seems
very hard to kind of.
Sorry, Nicola, your line is coming in and out, but you are back with us. You want a plan for the government. You want the government to get you out of there. Is that what you're saying?
Just, you know, and we do appreciate that the airspace is closed and that, you know, it's a safety reason. However, you know, when and if the airspace is open, we shouldn't be waiting. There should be an active plan in place. And as I said, you know, it's not my area of expertise, so I am very respectful of that. But at the same time, it's very hard pill to swallow when you're sitting here in the middle of it, when you only wanted to come for 4 days.
Yeah. And what are you hearing and what are you seeing, despite the fact that we're hearing that normal life is continuing to a certain extent? It's a weird experience. Is that fair to say?
It's very weird. It's extremely intense. This morning we weren't allowed even contemplate sitting outside. Everybody is not really talking to each other. There's nothing coming from the hotel in terms of, you know, they're telling us it's all very safe and fine and don't be worrying. But yet on Saturday night, we all got these alarms to our phone bin, like, you know, take shelter. There's missiles incoming. We ran to the lobby. We were in the lobby until 6 a.m. because we didn't know where to go, what to do. You know, and then obviously when you have that couple of hours of quietness and calm, you kind of, you know, we're fine again. And 1 minute we'll be sitting with each other laughing and the next minute there's tears running down our faces because you can see missiles been intercepted above your head.
Mm-hmm. And where do you go when you're told that there is an alert?
So we went down to the lobby and, you know, we kind of asked about an evacuation plan, and the gentleman that we were speaking to didn't really have one. But then we were reassured yesterday that there is the basement there. But they seem to be of the opinion that, you know, oh, we'll be fine. You know, that the airspaces are catching the missile. Dubai have such a strong, I can't think of the term, but, you know, but I suppose that their air defence system, that's it, their air defence system
and
is good.
I'm sure the families at home are worried about you. They're probably delighted to hear you now on the radio, but you have small ones at home.
Oh, Claire, I have two babies and she's two on Wednesday, you know. I have a three-year-old, you know, the girls here, our kids are all ranging between 1 and 5. You know, so we just, you know, and you know, our families, you know, we miss our families, you know, we've locked one on at home ourselves with our families, you know, we just want to get home. We are speaking to them every day and, you know, we are reassuring them, and there is levels of reassurance. But for us as five women who plan everything and, you know, we're in such, I suppose, positions and professions where we're doers, it's very hard to sit here and not be able to do anything.
Yeah, and it's a big decision, isn't it? So to take a little break and say, well, we're going, we'll do this, and this is our gift to ourselves. For this to happen, it's just the worst. You know, it's the worst outcome. And I think everybody listening to this who has been in that position will understand how frustrating it is not to be able to get back home after the couple of days.
Very much so.
So you want to get out, you want the Irish government to help you get out. I'm just looking at the latest message from the minister, the public message from Helen McEntee, who says if you haven't had information that unless you've been advised by your airline that they've booked you on a flight, Irish citizens should continue to shelter in place. So you have to stay where you are pretty much until you get word that it's safe for you to go.
Yeah, and that's very much the narrative. It's stay indoors, don't. Who actually booked a private car and went to Oman, and their flight plans changed. We took her number just to kind of make sure they got there okay. But as five women on their own, I'm sure you can appreciate that's not something we can do. You know, that couple went off and I think she'd originally planned to fly to Nairobi and then into Germany and then to the UK, whereas now she's flying to Ethiopia from Oman and she said, but we were advised not to do that, which obviously is the safest option for us. So we are staying put.
Right. Well, look, hopefully in the coming hours, something will be sorted for you. But we'll keep in touch with you, Nicola, and keep the spirits up. And I'm sure people who know you will be delighted to hear your voice on the radio, that you're safe and well, and the other girls too. And we hope you get home soon.
Great. Thanks very much, Claire.
That's Nicola Hanlon, who's an Irish mother stranded in Dubai with her friends, who went off on a short 4-day break to celebrate the 40th, and they cannot get back. I want to go to Sarah Schiffling now, who's a supply chain expert with the Hankin School of Economics. And Sarah, we were talking to Chris Reynolds a moment ago about how this is all going to impact the supplies of oil, of petrol, of diesel, of gas, but also the everyday products that we rely on. And Chris expects big impacts in the coming days and weeks. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I think that's really the key points are the Strait of Hormuz, where 20% of oil and gas globally comes through, and that is now completely closed. Well, saying closed, it's obviously not physically closed, but the risk is so high that shippers have decided, no, they're not going through there. There have been reports of at least 2 vessels that were hit by unidentified missiles or projectiles, and there were small fires in those vessels. Nothing major, no vessel has sunk so far, fortunately. But of course, shippers are not taking that risk to go through the quite narrow Strait of Hormuz. The shipping lanes there are about 2 miles wide. And then the other crisis area is that this also affects the Suez Canal and the Red Sea. So this main trade artery between Asia and Europe that really saves us those 2 weeks of going around Africa. Of course, there have been issues there in the past couple of years repeatedly with the Houthi attacking shipping in the Red Sea. So this is not new, but the first shippers are now saying, no, this is now too dangerous for them. And they are going all the way around Africa with all the delays that brings.
Okay.
But of course, also supply chains are super interconnected. So all of that oil that is currently not going into Asia affects what is being produced in Asia. And that is a lot of stuff that's being exported into Europe as well.
So if they opt to take the long way around, and you're telling us there is no option, ultimately, we pay the price for that, don't we?
Yeah, so the long way around is for the Suez Canal. There is that option of having a long delay and, of course, associated cost for the Strait of Hormuz. So the one that's south of Iran, there is no alternative. There's some limited capacity in overland pipelines to get oil and gas out that way, but that is not going to make up for the many, many barrels of oil that usually go through the Strait of Hormuz every day.
And Sarah, you know, when we look at this and how long it might last for, and everyone hopes that this might be over in a short period of time, Donald Trump saying 4 weeks on the outside of it, the disruption that it causes and the price fluctuations that happen as a result, they don't quickly evaporate, do they?
Unfortunately not, no. You've got all sorts of things out of place. And so right now we're looking at many, many ships that are waiting outside the Strait of Hormuz. So they are not where they're supposed to be right now. Of course, they're being diverted. Ships that do decide to go around Africa, they will be diverted. So then you've got materials missing that are input into production for factories that then cannot keep up their production plans. So all of this has a lot of ripple effects all the way down the supply chains. So this will be with us for some time to come, especially if this disruption lasts longer. So if we are looking at 4 weeks, this is going to be a month of disruptions in global supply chains.
The Strait of Hormuz, is it possible to close it? Because as you described, it's 2 miles wide. So it's not that it has been physically shut, and we shouldn't imagine that. It's a judgment call that's being made about its safety.
Very much so. So there's not like a lock that you could close or anything like that. The physical option of closing it would be mining it. That seems highly unlikely given the huge US military presence in the area. And this would not be a surprising strategy. So I would be very surprised if there hadn't been some contingencies, if there weren't undersea patrols there that were keeping an eye on this and making sure that it isn't being mined. But just the risk that we're talking about these sort of things, no shipper wants to put their big tankers that are very valuable, and of course a very valuable cargo and their crews, in that sort of risk. So shippers are deciding to go round, even though there cannot be a physical closure as such.
Sarah, thank you for joining us. Sarah Schifling there, who is a supply chain expert with the Hankin School of Economics. We're going to...
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.